Testing 1 2 3 1 2 3. Hello, hello, hello. It's me, Abby, and the Disaster Feminist Podcast. I have been gone. I haven't had an episode in a really long time, and I wanted to start a new season because it's been a while, and I am currently in Tasmania. I'm a little tired because last night my boyfriend and I were searching for the Southern Lights, and you have to go really late at night because it has to be super dark and you have to like seek out a place where there's not a lot of city lights and things. So we had to drive about 30 minutes outside of Hobart, and we went to this really dark little spot park, I guess you could say, on the water. And we looked up in the sky and we tried to see it. And unfortunately, I don't think we did. But we were also lucky enough to go to Alaska a couple months ago and actually see the Northern Lights. And that was pretty amazing. So we would be so lucky that we could see the Northern Lights and the Southern Lights in the same year. But alas. And just FYI, the Northern Lights are called Aurora Borealis, and the Southern Lights are called Aurora Australis. That's something I learned. But anyway, I'm here in Tasmania, and I mention it because it's been kind of a part of my life for the past couple of years. Since I released a last episode, actually, life has been pretty nuts because of many things. I think, you know, I started this podcast in the beginning of the pandemic, and life was also crazy then. But even after the pandemic, and, you know, who knows, it's still going on, it's not going on, who knows, life is still a little bit strange. And I decided with my boyfriend that we would leave New York, get out a little bit, travel, see the world while we were working from home, while the pandemic was going on, to see, you know, change it up. Because New York City was really scary during the pandemic, and it was really cramped, so many people. And we bought a car and just like drove around the country. And then we kind of just continued to do that and see the world a little bit. And now we're in Australia, which is kind of crazy. I never really thought I would be here, but I'm so grateful to have taken the leap and to live life a little bit differently. And that's all I can say to describe about how I've been living for the past couple of years. And I think, yeah, I'm just living life a little bit differently is all I can say. And I think I needed a break to really just live, you know, and not have every moment of my life be like, oh, what is this for? Or I'm going to document this on Instagram, or I'm going to, this is for what? Or I'm doing this thing because I need to turn it into something to make it into money or something. And that was so exhausting after a while. I think anyone who's in any sort of like creative field or anything like that, which I am. And if you don't know anything about me, if this is your first time on the podcast, thanks for listening. But basically a quick download of who I am, which, I mean, how can I sum this up in 30 seconds? But I've been living in New York for the past 15 years. I'm a producer, comedian, writer, performer. You know, I don't know why I just wanted to say I played the trumpet when I was a kid. I don't know why I decided I wanted to throw that in, but that's a part of my 30-second elevator pitch of who I am, I guess. I'm most recently a producer for the Michelle Collins show on Sirius XM and now her Patreon show. And I co-host with her a bunch. And yeah, I'm basically like a, you know, a creative, you know, comedy producer living in New York City, and I decided to switch it up. And, you know, now I'm living this other life and I'm traveling around and working from home with my boyfriend, who I'm not going to talk about a lot on this because he's a very private person and I don't even post him on Instagram or anything because he's just one of those people who likes his privacy, and I, what can I do but respect that? So, he's here. I mean, not here in this room with me, but he's around. But this podcast and everything is more focused on my stuff. So, but yeah, I don't even know where my thoughts were, but basically, yeah, this season of Disaster Feminist, like the first season was, you know, supposed to be a companion piece for when I went on the Melissa Etheridge cruise, and I got to interview a bunch of amazing women like Paula Cole and Jill Solbule, Dar Williams, a bunch of awesome women. And I talked to them about, you know, their life and music in the 90s and feminism and how it compares today. And I interviewed a bunch of those awesome women. And then I started to interview other people, more comedians and people that I think are awesome. And to talk about, I had them come on here to talk about their comedy, their life, their interactions with the world and being a lady in the world, being a person in the world. And this season I decided to expand because I'm having these amazing experiences all over the country and all over the world. And like, for instance, I went to this museum in Tasmania the other day called the MONA, the Museum of Old and New Art. And there was this whole wall of cast vulvas. And it was actually a very feminist museum. Like, you could just feel the feminine energy in there. And I loved that. I have a picture of all these vulvas, like all different kinds, all different shapes and sizes. Like, I'm just going to tell you, if you look at this, you will feel seen. And there was this woman there who was a harpist who was doing an art like piece. She was sleeping in the museum in this wing of the museum for 6 weeks. And she would write down her dreams and she would write music about her dreams. And then she would do a show every day at 3 PM and people could come and watch. So there's these awesome like experiences that I've had. I went to go see Fran Lebowitz in Colorado a couple months ago. And I got her book. I got to meet her afterwards. So I've been doing all this really cool stuff and I want to document it and I want to like share my experiences with people. And so I came up with this like term. Well, I didn't come up with it. So during the pandemic, there was this like craze called like flaneuring. And flaneuring, I think, is a French word. And it kind of means you're kind of like wandering around without any sort of direction. And I think I'd like to take the word to mean a little bit more than that, you know, but I think during the pandemic it got famous because people would just kind of take their walks every day and they would walk for hours because it was a pandemic and no one could really do anything but do that. And you were just flaneuring around, just kind of wandering aimlessly. And like, this is what I would do. I would just walk forever. I would be in Brooklyn and I would just take a walk and I would pass by houses I'd never seen before. I'd take pictures of street art. I would, you know, just flaneur. You're just flaneuring around. And I feel like I'm doing a little bit of that now. I don't think I'm wandering aimlessly, but I think I'm kind of wandering, looking for direction. There's a lot of change going on in my life. I'm living life a little bit differently. And sometimes I do feel like I'm flaneuring, and I'm kind of calling this season the flaneuring feminist because I'm traipsing around the country and the world and I'm experiencing life and I'm meeting awesome people and women and I'm doing a lot of feminist things. Another thing I did was I went to this female old female prison in Tasmania. Because, you know, Australia is kind of known for the prisoners that were sent here and how the colonies, and England sent like all of their prisoners here. And so like all of Australians are like, you know, supposedly quote unquote descendants from these prisoners, which is kind of funny. And so I decided to visit this prison that was for women, and specifically called the Female Factory, the Cascade Female Factory in Hobart. And yeah, I toured the grounds and you learn about these women's stories. And so that was awesome. And I just wanted to kind of dedicate this season to all of the things I've been doing. And yeah, that's basically what I wanted to say about why I'm doing another season and what the season's kind of going to be about. And I'm actually going to be interviewing the harpist from the museum. So that's really fun. But also, yeah, personally, I'm going through, like I said, some changes. I'm going to be 40 next year. Yeah, living life in a very different way in which I was living it before is jarring. There's a lot of amazing things I'm experiencing and doing, but it also feels pretty, like I feel a lot of guilt all the time that I'm, you know, get to do all of this stuff, but it's not without cost. I mean, I will tell you that, you know, it's living out of a suitcase and, you know, not having enough sleep and kind of living on the road a little bit can be very challenging. I'm also in a new-ish relationship. I mean, it feels like we've been together for longer than we have because, you know, we spend a lot of time together with my boyfriend. But yeah, other than that, it just life post-pandemic feels a little bit strange and weird. I do feel like I'm going through some sort of weird phase, like growing pains. Like it almost feels like like a volcano's going to erupt. Maybe the San Andreas Fault, like two pieces of land are rubbing up against each other or pulling apart from each other. It feels like both, honestly. Sometimes I feel like I'm being like ripped apart a little bit. But I hope that on the other side and through all of this, that in all of my experiences and all of the things that I'm feeling and things that I'm switching up in my life as far as energy and how I'm doing things can help me to grow and change and be in a better place after all of it. So I'll probably be talking more about all that stuff. But in the meantime, today's episode, I wanted to get out because I love her. I'm so lucky to have gotten to know her over the years because when I was working for a reproductive rights nonprofit, they're now called Abortion Access Front. I got to meet her and get to know her. She's a musician, feminist, you know, amazing person, talented. I'll just say it, Jill Solbuehl. She's been on the podcast before, and she has, if you don't know who she is, she had a couple of really famous songs. Two of them in which were in the Clueless soundtrack from 1995. And she wrote the original I Kissed a Girl. Jill Solbuehl has a show actually right now in New York City, and you can go see it right now, only for another week or so. It's called Fuck Seventh Grade. It's kind of a autobiographical musical about when she was in seventh grade and she was coming out as gay and she got bullied. And it's about her experience. I went and saw it last year. It was so good. And it's on a limited run again. And I'm sure it will run again somewhere. But yeah, we talk about her life, how she got started, how she got discovered. And yeah, just life in general and her show and how she actually did a house concert at her home in her hometown in Denver, where a bunch of her high school friends who she talks about in the show got together and she got to do a concert for them. It's just fun, and she's fun. And if you want to check out Jill and see her live, she has a bunch of shows coming up in the Northeast and the Midwest. Just go to jillsolbuehl.com and you can see where she's going to be next. In the meantime, enjoy the episode and my chit chat with Jill. I hope to see you all again soon on the next episode.
So you say there's still Tasmanian devils, and I say they're extinct. What's the verdict?
Let's see. Tasmanian devils. Well, I definitely saw one at a zoo in Sydney. So there's at least one in the world.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it's just you. Maybe you're right. What does it say?
It says Tasmanian devil. Okay, I'm on the Wikipedia.
And not the cartoon Tasmanian devil.
Oh, well, that's funny because I'm not a game person. I didn't like ever play video games, but the only ones that I did play was Sega Genesis Tasmanian devil. So I'm kind of like having a childhood nostalgic moment here in Tasmania.
Is that why you're in Tasmania?
Yeah. Because of my like three times I played the Taz game on Sega. Okay, let's see. It's it is formerly present across mainland Australia, but became okay, you're maybe half right, but became extinct there around 3,500 years ago. Oh, God. I'm just going to literally Google, are Tasmanian devils extinct?
Okay, good.
This is Let's cut to the chase. Okay. Well, they can't be. I literally saw one.
Well, I guess they can't be.
Tasmanian devils are back after almost going extinct. This is an article from 2020. So they almost went extinct, I guess. Because I also, when I arrived at the airport in Tasmania, they had like a, you could give money to donate to save the Tasmanian devils. So I think they almost are out of commission and we need to save them. And
you saw one at the zoo, right?
I saw one at the zoo in Sydney. Yeah, it was hiding in the little corner.
Was it cool looking?
Yeah, it looks like a huge rat, essentially, but like with a thicker head. Wow. You know, hot. You know, speaking of hot animals, I saw a giant red kangaroo also. And you've seen pictures of these guys. They're like jacked.
They are so jacked. They're like boxers.
Yeah. They have huge muscles. But yeah, I'm having a pretty good time. Pretty good. I'm having a great time. I mean, it's insane. I can't believe that I'm in Australia. Have you ever been?
Yes. I had one kind of single semi-hit in Australia in 1997. So I went out there. I was on their kind of version of American Bandsung called Hey Hey. They don't have it anymore. And yeah, it was pretty great. God.
Did you go to, was it in Sydney? Did you go to or Melbourne or?
Sydney, Melbourne, and somewhere on the coast. And I got to remember where that was.
Brisbane?
I went to Brisbane and there was another place. Because I remember I did a morning show where they did it at a marine park.
And did you have to play outside?
Yes. And they had a thing where they made me swim with dolphins.
What? For like on live television?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm
always reminded of that cartoon that was in the New Yorker years ago where they have two dolphins swimming and one says to the other, you know what I want to do before I die? Swim with two tourists from Connecticut.
Oh, gotta love the New Yorker. I love that. And I'm sure that their dreams came true like 50,000 times over.
Yeah, those Dolphins were, they knew their 90s American pop. They were so excited to be with me.
That's so funny. 90s American pop, you're like the queen. You're the queen of it.
90s American pop, it's so weird. It's, you know, I think as you get older, time is so, goes by so fast. And so like even these last few weeks, I've had people come to the show who are like, I listened to you when I was in sixth or seventh grade. And it's like, ah, fuck off. No, it's so sweet. But it just feels like yesterday to me. It's, I mean, it does and it doesn't. It's weird.
Yeah, it must feel like when, like from when you first came out and you first had like, I kissed a girl and to now, does it feel like it's been like a snap? Like it's just flown by?
Yes and no. It's weird. It varies, but sometimes it does. You know, I mean, I look at old pictures. It's like, wow, that was a long time ago, but it doesn't feel that way in a way.
Yeah.
I still feel like I've got this weird that I'm still a rookie.
Mm. Like almost like a, what's it called? Like, what's that complex called when you, not inferior complex, but the one where you're going to think you're going to be found out that you're.
Imposter syndrome.
Yes, there we go. Couldn't think of it.
It's not so much imposter syndrome, although I'm sure that's there, but it's more like, no, it's more like, oh, I haven't nearly reached my peak and I'm just beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of an exciting feeling.
I think it keeps me going in a way, you know. I also maybe because I haven't made, you know, my millions, so it's like, oh no, I still have to do this, you know. I don't have any other marketable skills and I'm not a trust fund kid, so
yeah, you're nonstop.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you do it, honestly. Like, it's, I look at you and like how hard you work and how much you travel and you tour and you put yourself out there. It's like, it's really incredible to watch.
Yeah. Well, meth helps.
God. Ooh, who's your dealer? Oh my
Cora,
God.
Could you imagine? Oh my God. Me on speed, it's redundant.
It's like two positive parts of a battery and then it like explodes. It's like, it shouldn't be like that. But you are having your another run of your show, Fuck Seventh Grade, which I saw last year, which was so awesome. Have you made changes? What's happening with this new run?
Well, people need to go. It's only going to be for two more weeks. Well, they end like it ends the 26th or 28th. I can't remember. But we didn't really have time to make any kind of script changes. The changes we did make are just the band. We put more harmonies. We did some arrangements that I think really are improved. A few of the songs.
That's great. Yeah, you have an amazing cast. You have the girls from oh my God, let me get their names right. Here we go. Well, obviously you have the amazing Julie Wolf.
We love Julie Wolf.
The music conductor who I had the pleasure of meeting and hanging out with on the Melissa Etheridge cruise with you.
Was that fun?
Oh my God. It's just crazy how fun that was. I mean, it was basically like the last cruise before pandemic.
COVID. Oh, I know. And aren't you a little weirded out to be if you would go on one again?
Would I be weirded out to go on
one? Yeah. Or you'd be all right now. There was a while, maybe because, you know, COVID. And I played with Julie a river cruise in Portugal last month.
What?
And it was definitely, it was a super spreader event.
Oh, and did you get COVID?
I had it like, you know, 3 weeks earlier. So,
oh, so you were the super spreader.
No, I didn't give it to people. I didn't have it, but no, yeah. So yeah. So I'm a little weirded out with those things sometimes.
I'm still very weird. I think COVID changed my personality too. I mean, I still feel like really socially awkward at times. I feel like very, I mean, I'm slowly getting out of that, but I think for a while I felt very, just felt weird interacting with the world and interacting with people because I felt like a robot a little bit.
I know, COVID. I look really fondly upon those first year and a half, though.
Of when we were locked down?
Yeah. I had a really good time, actually. Then it was like, I'm over it. But it was. I did a lot of Zoom shows. I was staying with at my friend's guest house in Los Angeles and in Palm Springs. And,
oh, that's right.
And potted up. And it was really... for some reason, I look upon it fondly, but I do think it had, well, especially on my friends with teenage kids, that they got really fucked up, I think. You know,
like
behind So, you know, that's the thing is I wonder, my show, Fuck Seventh Grade, is that... At least we didn't have social media and all that public shaming and on a massive scale. And
yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's funny that we're talking about the pandemic too, because I remember in the beginning of the pandemic and how weird it was and how, you know, we couldn't really go outside. We couldn't go anywhere. And I remember having the thought in my head, I remember feeling like I was back in seventh grade. I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to have to like play a game with someone. I'm going to have to hang out with my roommates. It felt very old school to me. Like it was like a snow day when I was like young.
In a good way?
Yeah, actually in a good way. I felt like I was tapping into a part of myself that I hadn't in a really long time because we were just forced to. And it was good because I remember when I was in seventh grade, eighth grade, being, I don't know, you want to like, you're discovering yourself and you're trying a few things on and, you know, you're maybe trying cigarettes for the first time or, you know, you're stealing things at the store or, you know, whatever. I mean, maybe I just did that and got caught at Wegmans, but, It was an exciting time and a very like rich time. And I'm sure that you felt that way too when you were writing the show.
Yeah, well, and during COVID, we worked. We did a drive-in version where I played to cars. And we had to rehearse, all of us. We had to pot up together, first isolate for a couple weeks, then see no one. So it was like seven of us potting up. And then we did three performances at a makeshift drive-in where people would just, they weren't even allowed out of their cars. They just, it was like some weird Stephen King novel where I was in the cars and they would just honk. You couldn't see anyone.
But that is so weird. That's like a weird futuristic like AI thing. That's a mind boggle.
It was really weird, but there was that beauty of the potting up with this group of really wonderful creators. So that was COVID was a good time. Post-COVID was horrible.
I know. Honestly, post-COVID is like things are falling apart. No one's...
And you have to go out. You have to hang with people. Fuck.
I know. I know. I mean, I had an interesting pandemic situation, as you know, because like I met my boyfriend during the pandemic. So I was like potted up with my boyfriend, getting to know him. So that was like a very specific experience. And I know the opposite is true for a lot of people. Like a lot of people got divorces, a lot of people broke up, you know, so it was very, it was a, could have been a great time for people, and it could have been a very terrible time for people.
Well, the couple that I stayed with in Los Angeles, they joked that they stayed together because of me, because they would blame everything on me. Like, where's my socks? Jill took my socks, you know, and to this day, they still use me.
Hey, you just saved, you saved a relationship.
I am so happy to help them.
Oh my God. You're in New York now.
Yes.
And you're finishing your run. And then what are your plans after that?
Well, I know I have to do a new record. I'm working on a couple more shows, but it's kind of that weird, well, you know, as a performer, it's like right now I'm complaining about being so tired because we're doing, you know, this was my day off. We're doing shows and then, but when it ends, I'm like, oh, I don't want it to end. Like, it, you know, it's such a tight knit group of us that when it ends, we inevitably get bummed out for a couple weeks, you know.
I know exactly the feeling. You like, it's like, you know, if you're in a musical with someone and then like you just bond and you have that stage time, and then it's like, what do I do with myself after this is done?
And also I'm one of these, I know I would have been diagnosed with ADHD, and it's that thing of, you know, how do I organize my day when I don't have, you know, I can write, but I've got this whole month to do it. I like having like, okay, we're having rehearsal at 2:00. We're doing this, a schedule. Then we're off and then back to the theater at 7:00 and it's showtime. And I like having that, you know, rather than that anarchy of my whole life.
I know, having like a,
so that's why we got to have people. Time. I want more runs of it because I don't really know what to do with my life. You know, I want to do, I don't know how to organize it. I want other people to do it for me.
I know. And it's hard too, because I'm sure like the idea has been thrown around of you going on tour with it, with the show at different venues across.
We're trying to find out. Yeah. You know what we need? And there's someone out there, is we need, for some of these other productions, we need producers. We need people who are going to give us or the theater a lot of money. I was at a gallery, the Pace Gallery, the other day, yesterday, and there was an exhibit on Picasso's, like his little sketch pads, right? But there was a thing where they were talking about him being kind of a, you know, living this bohemian, not squalid, but, you know, like artist lifestyle. Then he met Gertrude Stein, and then like, what, a year or so later, he's got like a chauffeur and a chef. It's like, we need our Gertrude Steins.
Oh my God, please.
Patrons, because you know what? Actually, around the world, they treat artists better, like the society or the government. Well, there's funds and grants, and here not as much, as you know, not anymore.
I know. They artists support their artists in Europe. Like music is always like a huge thing. The like music education is always like lifted in at least in like Europe and the UK. I feel like more so than in America.
And this theater thing, I joke to my theater friends about how, oh, I moved on from music industry to off Broadway because it's so lucrative. And they're like, oh.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It is true that, but it is a labor of love. It's so much fun to do. And
I know. It's a different world. Also, like the music industry probably has changed so much since you started. Do you think that it was maybe easier or harder or maybe both from when you started to now?
I think that that's a complicated answer because one thing was we complained about the labels and that the old system, but you could be kind of a middle class artist, whereas like you weren't the 1%, you weren't, you know, the top, but you'd still get, even if it was terrible days, you'd get advances, you'd get the rock bus. They put money into a video. And now, you know, no one does that anymore. Unless, you know, it's only like the top percent and, you know, the tickets are like $500 to see those. And, and there's less clubs, I think. I mean, when I was in my early 20s, I think we would play clubs all the time, local, live music. There doesn't exist that anymore. Radio's different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more democratic. Like someone can be on TikTok or YouTube and they can start their thing. But it's still, you know, which means that in the days you'd have to have money in or someone to help you go into the studio. Now, you know, people can do it from their home.
Yeah.
Which means it's more democratic and there's still great stuff, but there's a lot more shit.
Yeah.
You know, so weed through it. And also I think, and I feel like talking like old granny. But in my day, I think it was true that because there were clubs, I always think about like the Beatles, you know, when they first started, people, you know, got fame. People were like, wow, it wasn't like they were just these virgins and just started learning music. They were cutting their teeth in Liverpool or in Hamburg, you know, playing how many hours a night on speed. And, you know, so I think that practicing and playing and honing your craft, you know, whereas, you know, but maybe there's a lot of artists where it's more electronic and you don't need to be in front of an audience. And
right.
But it's really different. But I think it's to be an artist, it's harder now of any kind. I mean, just when I first moved to New York City, you could afford to live in New York City.
Forget it.
And now, if you live in New York City, it feels like you either have to be a trust fund kid or I don't know how people do, or bunking up with 10 people. I don't know.
10 roommates and you have 50 jobs and you, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I think, when I started, you know, on one hand, there wasn't the venues of the YouTubes and the TikToks and getting known and the influencers. I also wonder if for a lot of the younger generation, for some, if music isn't as important as it was for us. Like there's certain things, like I know some friends, teenage kids, yeah, they've got, you know, the idols who they love or the Taylor Swift or the things, but this kind of like, you know, having a playlist of really, you know, putting together of things that, you know, maybe games are, there are other things that take precedence and new things, whereas we would have our identity by the music we would listen to.
Yes. You know?
I just think there's different choices today.
Yeah.
And that's not better or worse. Yeah.
It's just different.
It's different.
Yeah.
Also, yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I was probably one of the last generations of making like mixtapes and curating playlists. And
yeah.
I mean, and I can only speak for myself too, because I'm also a very musical person. I love music. I studied it. You know, I'm of that mind where like I appreciate a good chord progression. I appreciate harmonies. I appreciate all of that stuff. And yeah, and if someone just wants like a chewy pop song, that's also fine. But it's just it's just different. I think my nieces and nephews aren't as into music as I was, and they don't really they just go on TikTok and they do the little dances. I will say the good thing, I'm not really on TikTok, but I will say one of the good things that I think that it's doing is bringing back old songs and ones that are almost like remakes, or they sample old songs so that the newer generation is getting to know some of the older music. I will say that's probably a good thing.
That's good. Well, there's that sense of history. And again, I don't want to sound old, but a friend of mine teaches at NYU, teaches a music class, and was mentioning Bob Dylan, and the kids were like, who is that? And that's a music class. And I thought,
that makes me sad.
That, you know, maybe people not knowing their history as much. Like I knew I knew who for everything from Louis Armstrong to Elvis Presley to Chubby Checkers to, you know, Miles Davis, people that were before my time. There was that history of music. But also, I'm a nerd. You know, I liked that, you know, I don't know. It's interesting, but it's not anything that's better or worse. But the idea was, is it easier to be an artist? And maybe in the old kind of paradigm, or what I'm talking about of, you know, coming to New York City from the smaller town and pursuing your art, whether that's fine arts or music or acting, you know, I think on one hand it could be harder unless you, you know, there's new roads.
Yeah. And even though you didn't have, well, it's funny because the way you were discovered was almost like a dream. I feel like that's what people like want. Like, weren't you discovered like just in a club in Spain? Weren't you doing, I forget that story.
Well, that's when I first started playing. But when I came back from my year abroad program and came to Denver, and it was actually, and I talk about this in the musical, where I was doing a bunch of open mic nights. And
in Denver.
Yeah. Like, you know, we all, they started and I finally got my own night, and I decided at some point, I'm just going to move to New York City. I had a friend who went there, and I had a job selling shoes at a department store waiting for me. And for some reason, a guy from a record label happened to be in Denver at the Holiday Inn bar where we were doing it, and brought me down to Nashville, and which was weird. I wasn't a country artist, but yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just persistence and working on it, but there's always that strange coincidence or fate, which I don't know what I believe in or not, but yes.
Yeah. It's almost like, yeah, I think there's a quote that I'm probably going to brutalize. It's like when your luck equals like time and persistence or something, or when opportunity meets, when you've like, basically when you've worked so hard and you've put yourself out there so many times, like the chances of something happening like are exponential because you're putting in the time.
I've had a lot of those. I mean, not so much even career things, but strange things in the last few years too.
Really?
Yes. In fact, well, here's the interesting thing. Here's a good story. So this fucked seventh grade show. I deal with, you know, a lot of the, you know, how horrible it was that time for me, and you know, feeling like, oh, am I gay or not? And, you know, in those days, you just did not tell anyone. But thinking that, you know, it was junior high for a lot of people, it's just such a brutal time. You know, people can be so mean, and I felt that there were bullies. And 2 years ago, well, 3 years ago, I met this, I was backstage at a show. This is a long story. Should I even do this?
No, yeah, do it.
Okay. So yeah, I was backstage at this NPR show, and Tom Arnold was the other artist, and his sister-in-law was there backstage, and we were just talking, blah, blah, blah. Where are you from? Denver? I'm from Denver, too. Where'd you go to school? Went to the same school. What street did you live on? We went, lived on the same street. She was a couple years older than me. God. She is. And then, well, where? And I said, 55 South Elm. And she goes, get out of here. I moved into her bedroom like 3 weeks after they moved out. So.
Oh, my God.
We became friends. And then about 8 months ago, the woman who has that house that we both lived in. Oh, yeah. Before that, I was walking by my own neighborhood, and I knocked on the door to see if they still had the shag carpet, you know. She goes, oh, I know who you are. And she decided to put on a house concert in my old place.
Oh,
so I went
God.
There, told a bunch of people. All these people from my junior high school came. So some of the people, they were paying money to see me tell them how horrible they were to me. And then, because of that, someone put together the sixth grade, which was a reunion, which was like 3 months ago. And the woman who is the antagonist in my play, I call her Kathy Pepper, although she was actually nice. I just liked her name. It was another girl.
Oh, okay.
She came to the show. So the woman who, the actual person, so I had all these people. And what was amazing is that you realized after talking to everyone, it's kind of a prologue to put in the play, that everybody was so miserable. And if I would have known that everybody was just as miserable as me.
Yeah.
That might have been great comfort. But now, because of putting out this play of seventh grade, I've got this connection where we talk like we have a chain where we talk almost every day, all these people from my seventh grade.
Oh,
because
my God.
I know. It's so funny.
That is a crazy coincidence. Oh, my God. With the house and everything. It was meant to be.
And it really put a kind of pin on it. I mean, put a pin, a little button.
Yeah.
And the whole experience of that, you know, here I was too afraid, you know, to tell people about my sexuality. So, of course, it's like, you know, late 70s, and, you know, who does that? And, you know, no one did, and, you know. And here I'm singing, they're like, we're so proud of you, you know. Yes, and you know, my daughter's gay, and you know, I tell her about your song, and
oh my
you know,
God.
There's something. Well, maybe because I lived in a cool place. I went to, you know, we were in Denver, and it was very progressive. Maybe it'd be different if I grew up in outside of Norman, Oklahoma. And I don't know why I'm dissing Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, sorry to our Oklahoma listeners.
Yeah.
Wow.
All
yeah.
Right, that's
no, that's amazing. I mean, it's like you continue to inspire people and you know, make them feel better and included, and that's an amazing thing. You should feel good about yourself for
doing
that.
It was so great. So the woman who I say is the bully in my show, but at the end of the show, she, you know, there's a nice thing, but So she came opening night. This was last week. And we had a party. And first of all, I told her, look at Kathy. I'm going to tell you because you are a bully in my play with your, you know, even if you weren't. So I'm showing you the script to, if you want me to change your name, of course, my director, no one's like, we can't do that. The name Kathy Pepper is so great, you know.
It's just so good.
And so I wrote her and she wrote me back, don't you dare change that name. You know, like, so
she bullied you even now.
Yeah, but in the most wonderful way. She's actually, she was never the bully. It was just, I used her name. And so she was there front row. And then afterwards we had an after party and she walked in and everyone's standing up and giving her the applause. It was so sweet. She's really sweet.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's awesome. That's a good thing. It's art brings people together.
It brings people together. And it was this whole kind of, you know, I also think we have selective memory sometimes of that, you know, everything was so awful. And then right. You run, it's like, oh no, there were some good times too, but it's not as fun to put in the play, you know?
Of course not. Yeah. But
I forgot all about that until, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
I was, and talk about bad, you know, I did things like I smoked pot in seventh grade, but I never shoplifted like you. Ah! I never did. I was too scared. Oh,
I went through a badass phase then. My friend Deanna and I, I won't say her last name. We used to shoplift. Oh my God. Like steal stuff from the mall. And then when I got caught, I got caught at Wegmans and I was so terrified that it stopped me and I never did it again.
What's Wegmans?
What? Wegmans is probably one of the most amazing grocery stores that started in Rochester, New York, where I'm from. I'm wearing a Kodak shirt right now. And it's like almost everywhere. They just opened one in New York City. You should go. It's at St. Mark's Place. They just opened a Wegmans there.
Wow.
And when you go in, I'm telling you, you need to give me an update because it's just like, it was a family-owned business. They treat their employees well. They have great produce. The layout is good. They make their own bread. They make it's just like a whole experience in itself. It's amazing. And I grew up with it and now it's become like a cult classic. So,
wow. So you have to go. Colorado, we did not have.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's funny you talk about, I was just talking to the costume person today and she got busted for shoplifting and they took her to jail. Hers was better. At least she shoplifted in Bergdorf's, you know, and, you know, fancy pants department store. I mean, if you're going to shoplift.
I know. I was like at Kmart.
I mean, I don't know this Wegmans, but it doesn't seem like it's Bergdorf's work.
I was a blue collar stealer. I didn't grow up with a Bergdorf's. I didn't even know what that was until maybe like 15 years ago. So, you know, yeah, I was just like, I was low stakes Wegmans, Kmart, you know, Walmart, that kind of stuff.
See, we had in Denver, the place where my friends would shoplift was called the Fashion Bug.
Oh, we had the Fashion Bug too.
Really? The worst thing. And she would put, my friend would steal, she'd steal like a tube top, put it underneath her other shirt. My friends always stole tube tops. I don't know why, maybe it's because it was easy to steal.
Oh yeah, bras too. And I'm sure back in the day they didn't like have security tags or anything.
Tags.
So it was just so easy. Oh my God.
But I didn't do it. I never ever did.
You were too good. You're a good girl. A nerd.
I was a nerd.
Well, nerds rule. I mean, yeah. I'm definitely a nerd too. I mean, I played the trumpet. So.
I love that. Yeah, I was thinking I didn't have, I was so into to stuff that most of my friends who were girls were not into, you know. So at the very, I had, you know, just weird nerd music things and art things, and yeah. And now I've met those nerds.
Yeah, and they're doing amazing things. You like go to like TED conferences and stuff, and
I can talk to people who have sometimes the same interest, and that's, you know, it's a big world out there, and you meet people.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, you meet so many people. Like I said, you travel a lot, and I still think that you should be followed by a documentary crew, because you do these house concerts, and you're very political too, which is amazing. And I think that you could, with your house concerts, bring the left and the right together. I really think you could.
Oh my God. Wouldn't well, I love when I talk to people from, although right now it's so, you know, everything's so hostile.
But, it's very hostile.
I love talking to people who are sometimes, you know, instead of, you know, banning people from my side who talk, who are right wingers. Mm-hmm. I love engaging with them in the most polite, goofy way. Isn't it? It disarms them. And they're like, oh, well, you know.
That's how you do it. That's how you do it.
You never know. You may change someone. You never know.
You never know.
Or make them engage in a better way.
Yeah. Yeah, that just like tap them to closer to being kind, or tap them more toward the center. But do you have any new political songs for the 2024 election?
No, I need to start. You know, the thing, I think in the last month, it's been so heavy and so awful.
Yes.
That, and I'm a political being. I mean, I just get up in the first for an hour. I'm reading the news, and I'm reading. And I've had to for my sanity over the last couple of weeks, especially doing this. It's like, the arguments I'm just dealing with right now are sports people. I'm dealing with someone who doesn't like the Denver Broncos. And so but that's the kind of, it's kind of a cozy place.
It's a cozy
something
fight.
That doesn't really matter in the, you know, that you really don't care about, but that I've had to consciously and mostly subconsciously, like last night, I went to documentary Liz Weinstein's, the name of it?
No One Asked You, the documentary.
Genius. So I'm there at the premiere and I'm sitting next to my friend, but I know that there's a Bronco game going on Monday night. So it's like, well, no one's looking. Like every 15 minutes, I just looked at the score, you know, hoping no one would see me put on. And I think it's just almost this weird little calming, like tranquilizer safety net. Because right now, it's a really shitty time.
There's a lot, yeah. Lot of things going on. I know.
So once in a while.
Yeah. It's good that you are, you know, bringing some relief to people, and they can go see your show, and they can sing your songs, and they can feel good.
As far as political songs, I will be back soon.
Yeah, you need a break too. I mean, obviously.
I need a break.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're the vessel in which you're digesting all of this crazy news and then having to output some fun, creative thing, that can be draining for sure.
Yeah. Well, here I did This was a few weeks ago, and I had an old song called "Would You Have Hidden Me in Your Attic?" And it's really about, you know, then it goes on to the neighbors accuse me casting spells. It's really, you know, it was touching upon, you know, the horribleness. And if, and you would get people who would be like automatically wanting to start an argument. And this is, what can you argue with this? But my favorite one was, because there's, you know, it starts off with a mention of the Holocaust, but I mention other things and preface it by saying, you know, this is, it's awful what's going on in the Gaza. It's awful what happened with the mosque. But the guy that was really upset was saying, you know what? Well, what about, you know, people like me who people called grandma killers who didn't want to get the vax? It's the exact same thing.
So this guy, are you kidding me?
Yes. So this, the anti-vaxxer was the guy who was like, well, and first of all, it's like, what does this have to do? And you are insane. But I loved engaging him. And of course, there was, everybody was like ripping on him. And I was
of
like,
of course.
Second, let's just, you know, let's reason this out, you know. So you feel like because you were ridiculed for being an anti-vaxxer, that's like sending you to death camps, or, you know, that's the exact same thing, or being, you know.
Oh, my God. This yeah. false equivalency of what people think of their, you know, bearing the cross moments. It is a little bit strange.
It was unexpected. You can expect, because everything is so volatile, but I wasn't expecting an anti-vaxxer.
It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
God.
Amazing.
Oh man. Well, I know this is your day off, and I want you to be able to enjoy the rest of your day.
And well, I have to, friends in town from Minnesota, and I don't want to, I have to go. I have to. They're wonderful people, but I have to
get a
bite to eat, which I'm like, I just want to sit and watch another documentary about a cult.
Oh my God. Same.
Which one are you into?
I mean, which one have I not? I mean, this is a classic one, but did you see the one with the lady with tough titties? The Indian cult that moved to like Oregon. In the 70s?
Oh, yeah, Bhagwan. I know people who would join that.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. I knew people from Colorado. There was a lot of people. There was two places near me. There was where I lived. There was the Divine Light Mission, which was Guru Maharaji. There was the Krishna Temple was nearby. And so, yeah. And I knew people who followed Bhagwan. And, you know, sometimes at first, they're not so bad, you know, let people, but then
right.
There's something a little twisted at the end. Have you seen the Source Family?
Oh, I have heard about this, but I haven't seen
it. Oh, that's
doc.
A good one. I mean, if you have to join a cult, it was really about music, sex, and rock and roll. And there wasn't really, well,
there you
know,
go.
He wasn't molesting kids or anything, you know, he was just.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, so that's what I mean, you know, if you had to join a cult, but the ones, I love the ones that are like, what did I watch? The one about, I mean, the online ones, you know, especially in COVID, the lifestyle people, the ones, Twin Flames.
Oh, Twin Flames. I just started that one actually, and about the couple and that crazy guy who was telling people to like, just like go marry people or something. I mean, I don't even know. Yeah, I'm still at the beginning stages.
We'll talk later. But yeah. What I love is that I understand it must be, you know, like the anarchy of life to have someone tell you what you should be doing, the someone who you think is divine, you know, in a way I'm kind of envious of that, even if, you know.
Yeah, there's a direction. Well, this is what you should do. It's like it's lifted from you, the weight, like, oh, just tell me. It's like a release or something.
Yeah, but these ones especially like the Nexium and these ones, I don't get it because the people are so uncharismatic. I mean, I can understand Manson and Jim Jones. I mean, look at their eyes. They had some charisma.
There's something behind their eyes.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I understand Manson. Listen.
All right.
I'm going to go.
You're going to go. Thank you so much, Jill, for chatting with me. And everyone should go to your show and follow you and follow what is next for Jill Solbuehl.
And go to my website because I've got new dates coming up.
Ooh, okay.
Hey, I'll give them to you.
Give them to me.
Yeah, I got them. I got new dates in the next for early spring.
Perfect.
All right, everyone.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, darling. Jill.